There is several very cool ones, and one that I really like is called Warp. And Warp can actually help you use natural language in your in what you would call normally your terminal. And why do I think that's cool? I'm sure as very seasoned developers as you guys, then you're like, well, I always know how to do my terminal, but I have sometimes found my terminal to be not very user-friendly. And so the fact that you now have, natural language in a tool called Warp that actually makes it possible for everybody to use their terminal, I thought was super cool. But another one I just want to mention is called Figma, and it is an extension on Figma, turning Figma design into websites and also built on Codex. Now there are 70 others, and you can find that on OpenAI's webpage if you want to, but those are just a few of the very cool things happening right now.
Welcome to X10 Women in Tech podcast. We are a tech community podcast highlighting stories of women in tech and inspiring everyone in tech. We aim to provide a platform for sharing experiences, insight, and success stories that inspire and empower others in this dynamic industry. Hi, Jonah.
Yes. Hi, Shetty. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm excited for today.
Yes, me too. And welcome everyone for tuning in to our new episode in this podcast. I'm your host, Jonah Anderson, and here with me also is Shetty Turefi. And we are thrilled to have you join us today with a great speaker that will share us about a lot of interesting things about tech. And today we have a guest in our podcast. Her name is Emily Lundblad. She is the Director of Data and AI at Meso NextBridge, with 14 years experience in the data and AI field and industry. On the mission to improve the world with data and AI, using data to make business both more efficient, more sustainable, and more valuable to their customers. Emily is a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional, Microsoft MVP in data platforms, and has been nominated in the year 2023 for HyperRight's Nordic Top 100 for data and AI. Emily holds a minor in machine learning and AI with MIT. In addition to that, she is busy finishing up her executive master in IT management at ITU in Copenhagen, Denmark. And she holds a candidate in quantitative finance and econometrics, and she has 15 certifications in data science, AI, machine learning, data engineering, and business intelligence. Emily has previously done research project with MIT and DTU related to machine learning for dynamic pricing, as well as data and AI for sustainability. In her career, Emily has been both the head of business intelligence, data and AI manager. And she is also an international speaker, speaking a lot about data and AI at the Danish IT, as well as Microsoft. And she has been nominated as Berlingske's Talent 100 and Nordic Women in Tech Diversity Leader of the Year. So I'm very happy to have Emily with us today. It's actually like uplift my spirit to introduce you, Emily. Welcome to our podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for welcoming me and for having me. It's an honor, Jonah, and also with you today to be here.
Yes.
Inspire many more women to join the field.
Yes, I know. And I'm very honored to have you with us. Shetty and I are happy. Nordic Women in Tech is like a a known nomination, a Women in Tech program that we have here in the Nordics. And I've been nominated a few times for this award as well. And I'm happy to have you, the leader, Diversity Leader of the Year, with us in this episode. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes. How are you doing today?
I'm very human today. I have been traveling and I'm a little bit tired. So I think I was even more enthusiastic last time we were talking, but I feel like we're slowly bringing up the energy. I've got M&Ms with me. I've got myself some candy. So, you know, maybe the sugar rush will make this even more interesting.
Yes,
that's
actually,
idea.
That's a great, yeah. great idea. I can see that. So I also just got off work this evening. So, but I'm actually energized reading your profile and introducing you about all the great things that that you did for the tech community, especially for the data and AI. And congratulations also for being one of the Microsoft MVPs in the Nordics. So great to have you.
Thank you. And likewise, congratulations on being nominated again. And congratulations on your book, Jonah.
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, so we have a lot of things to speak about today. So a lot of things to learn about you aside from what I've shared to everyone. I'm curious, Emily, about your tech story. How did you get started working into the tech industry? And I see that you got like 14 years of experience. That's a lot of experience. Can you share briefly about your journey?
Yeah, if I go all the way back to my childhood, then I actually grew up with a single mom and she wasn't very technical. And so, you know, whenever the video machine had to get fixed or the computer or the phone or whatever, that would be me. And so I think I just saw myself naturally as being slightly technical, although maybe not as technical as you guys. And then later on, I got an old computer from my uncle and I got to split it apart and try to put it back together. And I found that to be quite interesting. And then over the years, I seemed to just make friends with these guys that was very good with computers. And I don't know, I had a thing for nerdy IT guys and I learned so much from them. And when I was 18, I was living with four other guys. I'm still very good friends with them today. And they were all studying at the IT university. And I thought what they were doing was so cool. And I remember them introducing me to the first parallel computing experiments from Berkeley and databases. And we, of course, we had like VLAN parties where we played World of Warcraft and so on. So they became a major inspiration for me. And only this week when I had some challenges, I was calling out one of them. And later in the fall, I'll be joining a company and working with one of the other guys. So I think they have been a major inspiration. So shout out and thank you to Simon and Jacob and Christian, who all hold very cool jobs today in data and AI.
Yes,
so that was part of the story. And then I actually worked in marketing. And then I thought it was not technical enough. And I noticed that what I really liked was doing the spreadsheets and the calculations. And I was already studying business. But then I got into a position of a controller in a retail company. And we had some trouble actually collecting the data. So I started extracting the data from the systems, and then I learned how to integrate, and then I learned how to create databases. And first it was Excel, and then it became SQL databases. And then from there it became like, okay, how do we do reporting across the entire company? And so it started very much with like practical business problems, and then I went to solve them in a technical way. But the motivation was, how can we do this better? So it went from just having a finance job and being a little, have a bit of technical flair to becoming an expert in creating integrations and then doing some coding. And then from there, it became an online startup. And then the online startup suddenly had 30,000 products online. And when you got that many, you got to figure out, how do I do an algorithm? How do I do pricing algorithms? And that was how I then got started on my master in quantitative finance and econometrics to actually learn statistical modeling. And then from there, it went into consulting. But I think the core of it was that I liked solving problems with IT and, yeah, technical tools.
Yes, amazing. I like your story from marketing into the great things that you do for the career that you took, and then the inspiration also from your friends that helped you and inspired you to solve more problems and that you are today. That's really amazing, and I can relate to the fun of solving problems within tech. And I think you, Shetty, also can relate to that, even though I mean I work with DevOps, backend development, .NET, and maybe we code different languages. But the key thing is like being able to solve problems in any scenarios and help others. Regardless if it's business or the community, that's really the fun part of what we do. So it's amazing to hear your story, Emily.
I'm glad that we're aligned. Very cool.
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious as well, like how is your typical day look like? I know very off your daily responsibilities or maybe activities.
So I try to stay in my habits in order to get much done. So I normally get up about 6:30, and then I walk my dog, and then I do a healthy breakfast and some yoga, and I start planning my day. The overall schedule of my day, I plan the day before, so I have it sort of top of mind, like what meetings are gonna happen. But the main aims and all the tasks that need to be done, I do that around 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30. And then that's also often about the time when either problems start hitting my Teams intranet or my invites, or I start having meetings. And so, that's then what I do. And mostly, if I'm not at a customer actually helping them, then I have a lot of meetings, whether it's, leadership meetings, customer meetings, collaborations, or with the employees trying to figure out how to solve them. Their problems, how to help them out. So sometimes we're on a very technical level, and sometimes we're just talking very overall. And that mostly goes on until the afternoon, sometimes 3, sometimes 4. And then unfortunately, after that, that is when I do my deep work time. So that is when I will start coding. And then I have time to code until like 7-ish o'clock when I eat. And then I try to stop there in order to get good sleep. But if something really needs to get done, I might continue a bit later. Around 6, 7 o'clock is when I also start planning the day tomorrow to see is there anything else that I really need to get done in order to be ready for tomorrow. And then I do that, and then I try to relax and do some meditations. So that's my days.
Amazing. I like when you said the peak of that, like doing deep work to do some coding, and then it's hard to slow down your brain. I can relate to like after like doing the peak and then deep work and then slow down. I really like that you try to transition. It's not easy, especially if you're trying to solve problems and it sticks in your head, but it seems like you have a good routine to all over or throughout your day, and then land into making it like soft at the end of the day with a meditation and the relaxing part that you do. That's amazing. That's a good advice to listeners, regardless of what you do. Remember to slow down so you can
I
sleep.
think I have to say, that I'm human, and this is what I try to do, and some days I don't succeed. But what I feel is that your brain gets very stressed if you have to go from one extreme to the other. So if I have to be 100%, empathetic and listening to people and understand them, that can be pretty far away from being very technical. And so shifting between that during the day mostly does not have a good effect. Like I don't code well, or I'm not a good leader, or I'm not good at understanding the customer's problems. So I try not to mix it and to keep it in separate buckets. But life happens.
I can relate to that. Do you have anything to
Yeah,
add?
I'm gonna ask her about her tips for work-life balance.
My number one thing on my to-do right now is like set boundaries. Like, you know, really asking people what they need and what is not needed and not trying to over deliver the whole time. And then also having good habits, because that makes it so much easier to get the right things done for your health, your mental health, but also with your work. And if I only had to give people one tip, it would be plan your day the day before.
Yes,
Yeah.
that's a
That's a
great
hard target to achieve, by the way.
Well, you never know what's going to happen, but you know, then at least you're like, oh yeah, like there's that customer and there's this and this project, and yeah.
The toggling part, like having lots of balls to catch in the air, and then you don't know which to catch first because they are falling like deadlines. You can think of the gravity as like deadlines. But I do like your advice because my role also like a DevOps. I do like Azure administration, DevOps, development, a mix of different things, and I lead a group of developers and DevOps engineers as well. So I really have my advice is for my side. I actually try to have like focused time during the day, at least for like 1 to 2 hours, and I usually like it in the morning because like I'm still more relaxed. And then in the afternoon, that's when I open my calendar to take meetings because my colleagues or teammates are like from the States or from Canada, so they have a different time zone. So morning time in Sweden is like a good time for me to focus and do deep work. And then at the end of the day, that's when I take meetings and handle the leadership and social part of that. But it's not easy prioritizing. So I do really like your advice to plan the day ahead, the day before. I try to achieve that, but it's not easy to do it sometimes. But good advice.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm very envious of your time zones difference because that gives you a itch so that, you know, everybody else isn't bothering you all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it hard for, it's just my question to Joanna. I mean, for me, it is sometimes hard to switch focus area of work because you have a multiple tasks at hand. At least for me, it's just development. But for you, it's like DevOps and development.
Yeah.
Is it hard to switch tasks, like focus area?
It's hard sometimes actually, like switching in between, like even though I have like focus time, like Teams for example allows you to have scheduled focus time during your calendar, so it's literally changing the team status, like do not disturb Jonah is focusing on Teams, so my colleague sees that Jonah is focusing. But switching the focus between helping a colleague to doing coding on the infrastructure actually is not easy sometimes, but I'm actually getting used to it. But I can relate to what Emily said, the mix of you deep thinking to solve a problem, and then all of a sudden you get a Teams chat that, hey, Jonah, we need your help because this is very important. And when you're in that focus moment, sometimes you have to break that moment of deep focus in order to reprioritize. It's like the brain is kind of like learning how to adapt the way of things, a lot of things that I do. But it takes a lot of practice. It's easier said than done, but it requires practice, just like coding. Of course, you get used to it. And it's fun as well to learn.
Yeah, thank you for that. Like you said, it's hard, but yeah, through time you can switch focuses easily with practice. Yeah, we can continue with our interesting topics.
We do have like an interesting topic. So now we're talking about like the brain switch between deep focus, which actually introduced pretty well on the topic that we would like to discuss further with Emily, and it's about like AI for development or coding with highlights and focus on the ChatGPT Codex, GitHub, Copilot. We have these days, and a lot of great things. The Code T5, CodeGram, and Kite. So, Emily, can you share us whatever that you want to share about these technologies that we have today, and what do you think about it?
So I think the most amazing part is that we now can use natural language to write code. In the past, you really had to fully understand, functions and coding before you could get started. Now the amazing part is that you can write with either GitHub Copilot or Codex or ChatGPT what you would like to code, and then it will start, creating the code and the functions for you. And so suddenly the normal language that we've been using for centuries to create the world around us can also be used to create the code that we're working with. And that makes it so much more available for more people. And that's what it's really, what's really, really cool. And, each of them can be used in different ways. So Codex is, of course, the original coding model, partly based with on GPT. But also build on all the code in GitHub, the repositories. It's an open AI model, but today it's integrated in more than 70 different solutions. The most famous one being GitHub Copilot, where we can use it either directly in our code spaces on GitHub online, or we can use it in Visual Studio Code. And there are three different versions. You can use the normal Copilot, and what you do there, you create a hashtag and you write what you would like to create, like create a regression model or visualize the variable X and Y for me in a specific format, or create a covariance matrix. Or I'm just thinking top of mind what I've been doing. And it will start giving you options, and then you tap to the options and you choose the one that you'd like to have. And this makes it much easier for you to code fairly fast. In addition to that, we've also got call up at Labs. Now, Labs is more experimental, so you just have to carefully read all of the security guidelines before you start using it, especially for your work code. But it has many very cool features. So it can help you both explain code, and that means that it also helps you write documentation. But it can also help you translate it into a multitude of languages. I kept trying to count how many, but there's more than 20 something. Most of the very used languages you can translate into. And then in addition, it has something called brushes. And in brushes, we can clean our code, also meaning that it can use less energy or have less consumption than it would normally have had. We can use it to make it more robust. We can use it to debug some of the problems we might be having. We can also use it to write documentation. So those are some of the very cool things that we can do. And then one of the latest things that has come is that you have got Chat, which is similar to ChatGPT, but then within GitHub Copilot. So now you can ask it, explain my entire code, or help me debug, or what is the problem that's happening here. If I had to mention anything else, now that we're just on top of this subject, it would be that among these 70 different applications that's been built with the Codex, there is several very cool ones. And one that I really like is called Warp. And Warp can actually help you use natural language in your, in what you would call normally your terminal. And why do I think that's cool? I'm sure as very seasoned developers as you guys, then you're like, well, I always know how to do my terminal. But I have sometimes found my terminal to be not very user-friendly. And so the fact that you now have, natural language in a tool called Warp that actually makes it possible for everybody to use their terminal, I thought was super cool. But another one I just want to mention is called Figma, and it is an extension on Figma, turning Figma design into websites and also built on Codex. Now, there are 70 others, and you can find that on OpenAI's webpage if you want to, but those are just a few of the very cool things happening right now.
Yes, that's really a lot of things that you shared in there. It makes me excited. And I can relate to the terminal part. I mean, not all developers, I think, is very guru or master on the terminal part, but I do have experience in putting in, I mean, using the Azure CLI on Azure Portal in terms of there's a two type for that, the Azure CLI, and then there's also the PowerShell version. And I know the PowerShell version of the Cloud Shell in Azure, it has like an AI built in terms of writing the AZ command. It actually predefined it for you, which actually makes it easier for me, because if I want to do a command for certain things in Azure, I don't need to go to the documentation, because the AI integration in that command line is already built in that. So yeah, interesting technologies that we have today, and the Copilot part, and Codex, and the chat feature as well. How about you, Chetty? Did you have you worked with Copilot and Codex and all ChatGPT in your work as a front end developer in your workplace?
I mean, I personally use it like in my personal projects, the ChatGPT. I mainly use it for debugging purpose, and then also Copilot, GitHub Copilot. I use that tool as well. Yeah, but I want to have more in-depth tips from Emily regarding the GitHub Copilot, like how do you effectively use a GitHub Copilot? What should I think when I use it to get at least not the perfect answer, but an accurate one?
Tricks how to talk to it, kind of, right?
So, I mean, this is what puzzles me sometimes. Like, it suddenly gives me really great answers, and then I shift and I start a new piece of code, and then it gives me some completely wrong answers, and I'm like, what happened here? So I think some of the best advice that I've heard from others was, you know, make sure that you have made it clear and defined all your variables in the beginning, and defined your code and your data so that it fully understands what you're doing. Also, write longer text. So we tend to write, you know, very short commands in coding, and we also tend to do that when we're writing the comments for GitHub Copilot. But it does need more explanation and context. So this the same as we say with prompt engineering for ChatGPT. You know, give it the why and the how and what do you want it to be. So let's say I was starting a notebook, then I want to tell it, you know, you are an expert in Python, and you're going to help me write algorithms for, and this might be then a marketing purpose. And I need you to be especially an expert in a specific kind of data. So if I start out giving it all this context, and then I help it define the variables and the data that we have in there, then it hits it more accurately than if I just tell it, transform my data frame, or start writing an, I don't know, clustering algorithm and so forth.
I just want to know more, maybe.
Yes.
So there's a difference between going in and working on a piece of code that's already written, or you start from scratch. If I start from scratch, I want to tell it from the beginning, what is it we're going to do, what we want to do. What do I want GitHub Copilot to be an expert in today? The language, the area, the kind of data, you know. Like, if I was suddenly giving the task to a colleague, all the things I would be like, okay, today I need to be really good on your Python, and I need you to be really good on your data science for hacking or clustering or figuring out the best feature engineering. These are the things I need you to be really good at today. And I need you to be really good at it on, it could be Facebook campaign data. So giving it all this context. That being said, the more you work with it, the more it learns from you. So if you're locked into your specific GitHub account, that's the one you're working on, you keep working on it, it will get used to, okay, you do this with your variables and you use these languages the most. And so it's already pre-prompted to help you. And we see that very clearly within my team. We work with slightly different languages and we work slightly differently. And we can see that the more we've been using GitHub Copilot, the more it gets used to both what do we need and what do we ask for and how do we normally structure our code. And in that way, I also see that it helps the very seasoned developers better than the junior. It's a help for the junior, but it learns a better structure and approach and the right functions from the senior developers. where it can be more in doubt with the junior, like, I'm not sure what you really want or asking for or want to do here. Does that make
Yes.
sense?
Yeah, it makes
Yeah.
sense. It's interesting what you said there in terms of like how to talk to how to ask commands with the co-pilot in a way that it will understand and learn. And if I understood you correctly, I'm also new to like these things, and I've used it personally in my personal project and some tasks. But as far as I understood you, Emily, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you need to be more, especially if you're still trying to learn, and I mean have it learn your way, you need to be more specific in what you want it to do, correct? And then it's important to identify what language, what field, and it can give you more better answer. And then it's so smart that it can learn how we code and how we structure our logic within the project, and it learns. And I think it learning to adapt our way is a great thing. And as you said, also not just for junior developers, but also for senior developers that are very familiar about how the entire logic of the project should work. So it's a good assistant. I mean, for me, an AI assistant in terms of logic thinking. And of course, we have to put the human touch of verification, of course, like, is it really making sense what it's trying to do, or it's creating a bug for the production, things like
That happens too, yeah.
that.
I mean, we have
Yes.
to remember that basically GitHub Copilot knows everything that is in GitHub, and that's quite a wide playing field. And I don't know if you've noticed, what when juniors start searching around GitHub, they have a hard time finding the repos or the code that they're specifically looking for because they don't know the terms or the combinations of code that they're actually looking for. Whereas you can see people who are seasoned, they'll find it within 2 minutes because they know what they're searching for. And it's the same way, it's sort of reverse searching with the prompting. You've got to tell it exactly what is it we're looking for and what is it we want to do, exactly what do we want to achieve with the functions that we're writing. Otherwise, there are too many functions that it could give you and it might give you the wrong one.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. And I think that's the reason why the rise of the popularity of prompt engineering learning also started recently. Like learning how to do the prompt with these technologies are also important in training it, right? Correct? What's your input about prompt engineering that we have today, Emily?
So I just think that it's, for me, prompt is a weird word because it makes it so
It
unfamiliar.
is. It is.
And it's really, I think it's about giving instructions. You know, we have to remember also the first ChatGPT, the model below it, is called Instruct GPT, and that is because it's about giving it the right instructions for what you want. And you know, Jonah, when you have to give instructions to your coworkers about how to solve a problem, then you have to be very specific. This is what we want to achieve. This is what I know will be the best or efficient way. You know, these functions, try this, try that. And the same way, I'd say what you really want to do with all of these natural language models is that you want to give them instructions the same way you would with a junior employee or a colleague or similar. Think of how much information they would need to solve the task. Well, in some ways, these models need the same amount.
Yeah, so they really, we really need to be more specific in giving this like instructions and input to Copilot or this AI technology that we're using in coding as well. But I'm interested now. My mind is like toggling with lots of questions because this is like very interesting to me as a developer. So let's just say I'm a junior developer, and I'm using Copilot as an assistant for coding. I was thinking if I was a junior developer and using Copilot, it would be actually a challenge for a junior developer to identify if what ChatGPT is teaching or giving me is correct. So Correct, right? Because I
Yeah.
mean, if a senior developer, like we say, I'm a senior developer. I mean, I've worked in this system like 10 years. I know how it should work. Then ChatGPT is, I mean, Copilot is telling me, Jonah, code this, this, and that. And in my mind, oh, that's not true. I built the system. I knew this better. So finding that balance, like if you're in a team, like 10 developers, five of them are junior, five of them are seniors, working together in different repos, combined and merged into one. How, I mean, the team dynamics with the help of Copilot on the top as assistants. I'm curious, how would it work in a team and collaboration and pair programming without like losing the human touch and human verification as well? So it just I'm just thinking out loud. I'm just curious what your thought about it in my perspective as a senior developer thinking
So this
about
is
the
something
juniors.
I wanted to test, but I haven't. So my theory that I cannot prove because I haven't, done a full stats test on it has been that every company would make sure that they had their GitHub Copilot for the entire company. Then that one will be learning from everybody working there, and they will be learning their specific data and ways of working forth, and that will help actually the good practices of the senior developers pass on faster and better to the junior. But I can't prove it. So here's what I can prove. When you have on Azure your own Codex model or your own ChatGPT DaVinci model, GPT-4, then what we can see is that over time it does learn from all the inputs that it gets. And so the company helps it feeds it information in some ways. And that will help the next person who comes along and works with the model. And that is
Okay.
supposedly how GitHub Copilot is supposed to work too, but I can't prove it for you for now.
Okay. Yes. All right. Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. I
Yeah.
have a lot. Yeah. Go ahead,
Yeah,
Dashadi.
I
You might
wanted
probably you have something great in your mind right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was like both the GitHub Copilot and the Codex you talked about seem to be AI powered, and they are prompt that helps you to, it's a tool that helps you to write code. But what are the major differences when you work on it? What's the major difference between them?
So if I'm out talking about it and I have to show people, what I normally do is that I open the OpenAI Playground in Azure, because there I can switch between a pure Codex model and then I can switch to the GPT-4 model. And the difference that you can sort of visually see is that when I'm using the GPT-4, I write completely natural language and then it can start turning it into some sort of code, but it's not set up in a code structure. If I switch over to only using Codex, it's switched straight away to, code indentation. And if I'm writing, you will have a hashtag first. And so it's less natural writing and more coding. Now, that being said, there is a model, it's just an example, that's called DaVinci Codex. And that is because you want that combination of being able to write natural language and code. And we see that ChatGPT is quite good at both. But originally, you've got the GPT models that is made just for language, which is and not for code. So they understand what you mean when you say Python or when you say coding, but they don't necessarily know how to code. And they're better at writing a essay or a blog post or let's say a job description. Once you add on the Codex element, you also get the right way to write syntax, structure, functions, objects, and so forth.
Thank you.
I'm curious before we hopped into the next softer topic, is there anything that you want our listeners who are new to Azure or AI that you can like advise to, I mean, in terms of getting started with these technologies? Because as far, I mean, we developers, Shadi, you and Emily, we're working with those like technologies every day. That's what we do. But I'm thinking about those that are still getting started and really find these things interesting, but at the same time overwhelming. What's your advice for them to just get started without overwhelming themselves too much in learning all those things?
So I think the easy place to get started is ChatGPT. As long as you just remember that everything you put in there, every prompt you do, everything you write, you know, you are basically sharing with the rest of the internet. But it is a very intuitive place because it so fast gives you the answers back you like to have. I think also, you know, try it out on something that you just wanted to do for yourself, hobby projects or whatever. Like I wanted to create a trading bot. So that was one of the things that I started asking ChatGPT a lot about in the beginning. And then if you're starting to get into a technical field, I highly encourage that you just start trying to work with the GitHub Copilot. All the juniors in our company got encouraged to just try it out with no expectations, and they learned so fast. So, you know, play with it and have fun with it and somehow tie it up with the learning objectives that you have in your life.
Okay. Yes, I really like the advice on the learn by doing. It's a so typical developer's perspective of that. I thank you for the advice, Emily, for that. Anything else that you want to add in relevance to ChatGPT, Copilot, Codex, and other technologies that you've been working on?
Oh, maybe I have an additional question then before
okay,
that
great.
We summarize.
Yes.
I want to know about the security issues, like, or the security considerations one should, when you're using ChatGPT.
Yeah, great question. So it's important to note that overall, the rule of thumb is that you shouldn't share sensitive data. So anything that could be GDPR related is definitely off limits. You can also get in trouble if you are sharing proprietary data. So this could be code from your company, because whatever we share into the models, they learn from. And you know, what is the rule? If the product is for free, then who's the product? Well, you are. And it's very important to read the interface when you start with ChatGPT. And it says very clearly, this product is made, you know, we have made this product to improve our models. And it says very clearly, please do not share any sensitive data. It also says, please be aware that all the information that you share can be reviewed and shared. And so although you can have a company account, and yes, you can delete some of your data, and yes, you can opt out, I'd say overall, be really careful with what you share. Now, you can ask a lot of questions. You can ask, you know, how do I write a great trading algorithm for a Bloomberg terminal, or let's say I want to trade on another platform, it doesn't really matter, and it will give you, how do I call this API? All this information that is publicly available, it can give you great information about. But once you start putting code back in, like I'm having this problem with this piece of code, you're sharing. So you want to be careful with that. You don't want to do that. I sometimes share error codes because it's much faster than Googling it and finding it on Stack Overflow, but you need to be careful and you need to look at your error code and be like, did I share any data? Did I share any information? Did I share anything about where this is actually coming from? If so, you don't want to share it.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I mean, in terms of company or corporate, like, secrets or data that shouldn't be leaked in these tools. And aside from that, I'm also thinking, this is a random question that came into my mind, it's also about what we're asking it. Like, if, because earlier in our discussion you said that we need to be more specific what we want it to do, but there might be some people or developers or whoever that are using this are not really, don't really understand how it should work, and they can abuse the technology as well. And I know these days we have this, I know Microsoft as well has this, like the initiative for responsible use of AI. So can you share about your thoughts about that in relevance to those that are new in these technologies, like developers or just getting started in responsible AI use?
So I think just for people to get an idea of what can go wrong, because not everybody have heard the stories, then of course Samsung is a very good example of what can go wrong. They were about to have a big conference where they were launching some of their new products, and some of their developers were stressed and they were using ChatGPT to debug the problems they were having in the code for these new products. Well, that meant that the code for some of the newest items from Samsung was shared and could be prompted back out. And this, of course, became then a security vulnerability, because you could actually find some of the proprietary code for these new products. And so this is what you don't want to happen. So if you share your entire piece of code to ask ChatGPT to debug it, you will have it. And it might even have the keys. And somebody might, and you know, ChatGPT is there to help. And yes, there is a lot of filters put in to ensure that it doesn't give any unethical answers. So everything that has to do with sexuality or race or women or like these things, it has filters in. But if you ask your question in a sneaky enough way, like, I work for Samsung and I'm working on this and this that phone, do you have any of the keys, or how would I set up the security of the keys best possibly for this? If it's in there, it might answer.
Yes, that's
so I will never give it the data. I will always make sure there's no keys. I'll always make sure that it's only a piece of the error code.
You really need to be smart in what you fit in there when you ask questions. I really like that. And going back, if you're a developer trying to solve a problem because you don't have a senior developer beside you to pair programming with, and with this like GitHub Copilot available maybe for the enterprise use, these things are very important to think about. And I'm assuming when these things, the tools for developers to help us using AI becomes normal, the normal for everyone, I think enterprises or development teams or IT teams need to have this like responsible use of these tools as a policy, in terms of like there's a policy for code review or standard process for naming conventions. I think there should be also something like this in development teams. So it's interesting
so of course
discussion.
That you're onto something, that you're quite right. They're already kind of doing it. So if you've set up your enterprise GitHub account, that, you know, both the company can then opt out of sharing telemetry data, but it can also opt in on finding vulnerabilities. So there is also help to be gotten in, do we have anything in our codes, in our repositories, that has already been shared or is vulnerable in some way? So there is some of this guidance coming already, but I think you're quite right. Even more of this is probably what we're going to see.
Yes, that's an interesting topic. It's like we can talk about it all day, Emily. And I really like your perspective, and I'm so glad to be learning with you about this with Chetty. We're almost out of time, so we're skipping some questions, and there's a lot of things, but one of the most important things that I'm curious, and I think Charity as well, is the question about biases when using these technologies like ChatGPT and other AI tools. What's your perspective on this one?
So, of course, you know, whenever we have an AI model, it reflects the data it's trained on. And when you have a model like the ChatGPT or the underlying GPT-4, it is trained on all the data that's on the internet. And if you look at all the data on the internet, it is biased, because the world is biased. And so we do see still that if we ask for information about CEO, it will answer us if it's a man, or if we ask about a nurse, it will answer us if it's a woman. Now, filters are being put in place to reduce this bias. But it's hard to completely avoid it. But whenever we ask a question to one of these models and it gives us an answer, you know, you always get this, you're allowed to give a thumbs up or thumbs down. You're also allowed to explain why it's not good. And all these responses actually help change the model. So if every time we see it give an answer about a male CEO, we tell it, no, that's not true. It should have been a female, or it could also have been a female. This is a very small way to change the weights that's put on the likelihood of different answers in the model, and this way slowly changing the bias. So active feedback, that is what we can do, since we can't change the data and we cannot directly
Yes.
change the model.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's I agree with you, and thank you for the answer. And it's also about like the AI is learning the data that we feed, right? So I think the biases also, like, correct me, I'm not so familiar with all those things. You're the expert, Emily, in terms of this, but I think the data that we input as a learning model actually matters in terms of reducing or fixing these biases. Is that correct?
So if you had to imagine, what you first did is they first created a GPT model. So there was first GPT-3 and then 3.5. But the first GPT-3 model was just trained on a lot of data from the internet. And if we had to make it super simple for us to understand, let's imagine that I was just trained on 10 documents on CEOs. And out of these 10 documents about CEOs, 9 of them were about men and 1 was about a woman. Well, then there will be, you know, 9 weights on men for CEO and 1/10 weight for women being CEO. And that would be the balance in the model. So if you asked, you know, what kind of CEO should I expect? It would say, okay, most likely men, because there is, you know, 9 to 1. What it then have, what we've done later on is then that you created the instruct GPT models. And this is where a lot of labelers have been asking questions. And then there it has been giving the best answers, or it's been choosing the best possible answers. So it's been choosing them. And this is where the GPT models, or ChatGPT, became very good at actually interacting with what we were asking it. But this is also a reinforcement learning layer that's put down over the model, and it adjusts some of these weights. Now, that was done by all the labelers that was hired by OpenAI. But today, the labelers are actually us when we are using the ChatGPT in the interface. So if we change our answers, we can slowly, slightly change some of the weights that's put on.
All right. Okay. Yes, that's
And of course, if we see
interesting.
something that is completely off, we should flag it and send it straight away to
It's
OpenAI
really
so that
important.
they're
Yeah, it is really important that this thing. So you're suggesting, if I may rephrase it, so when we see that the feedback or the response from ChatGPT or any other AI tools are definitely incorrect, so it really matters that we report it as like false, because it is a good contribution in improving the learning model, correct?
Absolutely. And that goes for the code too. The same way that all the contributions that is done to fixing bugs in repositories and GitHub makes the code better.
Yes. Okay. Amazing. Yeah. It's interesting. I feel like I wanna learn more. Thank you, Emily.
Yeah.
So before we move to the final questions, one last question in terms of this topic, the Copilot and ChatGPT and AI technologies. What do you see are the top challenge that this technology has today in terms of like gender biases in this technology?
That was just a combination of two good ones. For me, there's almost two questions there. So there's the top disadvantages and advantages with the technology overall or for developers, and then there is for women. Well, I think if I start at the last one for women, what I'm worried about sometimes is that when the young people, men and women, use these models and they use it for everyday work, it becomes, you know, almost like a right hand or a coat that they put on in order to do their job. And so they take it for granted that what it says is true. And here we need to be a little critical, because otherwise we take on the biases of the past and we bring them into the future. And then we will think every time that a developer can only be a man and not a woman. So this kind of critical thinking is important. And if we look at this from a technical perspective, so we look at it for GitHub Copilot and junior and senior developers, then it's again critical thinking and actually being aware when you're giving something that isn't true or right. And this is where it can be a challenge. When you are a junior developer, you might start using code and it isn't completely correct. And the only way to get around this is to become even better at prompting these large language models so they don't get wrong answers. Whereas the more senior developers can say much faster, oh, this one wasn't right. But I'd also say if you get a wrong answer, you know, flag it and say this wasn't correct. Could you please correct it for me so that the models keep getting better? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I think more women should use this technology to kind of like balance the AI as well. Thank you, Emily, for that. Yes, I believe Chetty has a few last final questions before we wrap up.
Yeah, I would like to ask the question that how can individuals enhance their skills and keep up in AI and ML in the machine learning development? So do you have ADA suggestions?
So I of course have to say that Microsoft is launching so many good learning paths. They've also just launched a few for generative AI. They don't make you an expert, but they are a great place to start. So for a beginning and start foundation, I often recommend Microsoft's learning path. Once you've done that and you understood the fundamentals, I've actually been very impressed with what ChatGPT can teach me. So let's say I want to create a backpacking algorithm. This is something everybody who studied the computer science know how to do. But as an economist, I didn't know how to do it. So I asked my way through ChatGPT, you know, how do you create it? What's the foundation? So I didn't need to understand what is the challenges. And I actually think in that it's an amazing teacher. So jump into it and ask questions. And sometimes something I've started to say to it also is if I have not completely covered everything that is needed in the prompt, please ask me questions. So asking it to ask me questions back if something additional should be added.
Yeah, it's interesting answer. Yes. Okay. Yeah, did it answer your question, Terry?
Yeah, thank you.
And if I had to, like, something that made me more curious, so not like hands-on learning, but things that made me curious about what's coming, then it's really been the podcasts out there. So lately, of course, just all the ones that are on generative AI are really, really good. There are also from MIT, so very interesting. And then I have to mention the Lex Fridman, because all the top stars in AI have been on the Lex Fridman podcasts in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months. So that gives some amazing reflections listening to that.
Yes, that's great. And there are also like communities, like Emily, you're part of the AI community. You speak a lot about it. And I know AI42, Håkan, Silvernagel, my co-host at Azure User Group Sweden, he has another community that leads discussions related to AI and machine learning topics for beginners or even developers that are getting started. So yeah, there's a lot of tools in the Microsoft Learn part and a lot of talk about it. Emily, thank you so much for your time with us. I really appreciate it, especially after work and after a long day that we have all together. I really appreciate that and sharing the knowledge about everything that we talked about. If there are listeners and followers that want to learn more about what you do and want to reach out to you, where is the best place to connect to you?
So I spend most time on LinkedIn, and do feel free to reach out. I am a little slow at answering. I'm a little behind on trying to answer all the messages in my entry, but I get around to it at some point. And I'd love to hear from people. And that's where I do the most posts. And I'd like to thank you guys for doing this podcast and bringing more awareness to women in tech, and hopefully also inspire even more young people to join.
Yes, thank you so much. And also this topic about AI, and then the last questions that we have about how to reduce the biases in this technology. So it really matters your input in this episode to others. So I really look forward to real listening and look back into this discussion. All right. So yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so Emily. Much. Thank you everyone for listening to us. So thank you for listening. And if you are new to our podcast, feel free to follow us on our social media channels and podcast channels like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. And feel free to reach out to Emily if you have questions related to the topics discussed. And if you have a story to share and technologies that you're passionate about to inspire others, feel free to reach out to me and Shetty and be our guests. So thank you so much for everything. And thank you so much, Shetty and Emily, for your time today.
See you in our next episode.
Yes, see you. Bye.
See you. Bye.